Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Jesus reminds us to watch for the signs of his return. Today, we will explore further what we are seeing in our times that line up with what signs he said would indicate the potential of the end and his return. We will also discuss the practical meaning of this as we watch and as a remnant prepare as he so leads. And now your host, Richard Case.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday, and we're very excited to have our good friends, Rabbi Ephraim and Eric. Denny, who's normally on, is recovering from surgery. So he had a surgery to repair some things in the stomach area, hernia, and he was doing good yesterday, but today he's kind of sore.
Good for him to have a little rest
Denny,
time.
We wish you well and full recovery, and lots and lots happening over there in Israel. First of all, Rabbi, I know you had a trip to Canada for you and your kids. How did that go?
So that was really nice. I was mostly in the nature area, enjoying lakes and boats and stuff like that. We avoided politics and we avoided Toronto. But I heard a lot of, if you're relevant to our conversations, a lot of Jewish people in Canada are extremely disappointed with what's going on in their country and just feel not safe, disenfranchised, and just like in a completely different world than they grew up in. So it was pretty upsetting to see the dramatic change that they feel that they're in.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you think that will push a move? Like, is that just something that they're living in the midst of right now? Is that something that will spur them to potentially return to Israel or anything like that? What are your thoughts on what that feels like?
So there is definitely talk of moving, we're talking about moving. For most Jewish Canadians and most Jewish Americans, the same thing. Israel's a pretty far away place. If you're Orthodox, chances are you've come to Israel a few times and you're very familiar with the place. But if you're not Orthodox, even if you're Orthodox, it's a big jump. But if you're not Orthodox, you've been to Israel once. It's a nice place to visit. You don't know the language. You don't know many people.
Right.
It's just a giant jump. So they're thinking of moving to Florida, maybe, but not so much to Israel.
Right.
Just like New Yorkers. New Yorkers, I keep hearing all the time. And, they're talking about moving either to Israel or to Boca.
Interesting.
They want
somewhere more friendly to them, though.
Do they talk at all about what they sense is the reason increasing? We know it's all spiritual, but what do they sense is what's causing the growth in anti-Semitism?
Yeah, basically just the progressive attitudes of liberal values that are getting that are allowing for all this anti-Israel hate, which is a very thin cover for anti-Semitism. For years Syria was like killing hundreds of thousands of their civilians, but people weren't going out on the streets beating up Syrians in Canada or New York. But for some reason, they disagree with Israel's policies, which are, by the way, based mostly on lies that the media repeats. Even if it was true, so you don't go beating up Jews in Brooklyn because you disagree with Israel's policies. Like, what's the connection? You might hate China for being behind, for unleashing COVID, killing Chinese people in California, but so whatever. It's basically progressive values, which teaming up with the radical Islamic guys that are leading the charge, and thinly veiled anti-Semitism behind anti-Israel propaganda, which all based on ridiculous lies, which is all of anti-Semitism throughout history has been based on ridiculous lies.
I might mention here that I'm very active in the nonprofit community in the United States here in Israel. And on a trip I had about 2.5 years ago, actually about 3 years ago, to the LA area, which I go to frequently, I met with a very senior member of the Jewish community, very highly respected guy. who's not a professional in the community, but he's a top specialist in the medical field, I would say, you know, and well known amongst the Orthodox Jewish community. And we were at a kosher restaurant in the Pico Robertson area, which is a heavily Jewish dominated neighborhood of LA. And family after family were coming up to our table and telling him, thanking him and telling half, I would say a third of the families were telling him that they're leaving the area. And I asked him what was going on. And for similar reasons, he said that the LA Jewish Federation, of the greater LA area, estimated, and this was like 3 years ago, that somewhere between the 10 to 15% of the Jewish families in the community of greater LA are leaving California. And he said most of them are going either to Texas or Florida.
Change, by the way, which I'm also involved with philanthropy and fundraising and stuff. There's been a big shift in Jewish giving, whereas in the past, the vast majority of Jewish people, like wealthy philanthropy in the Jewish community, the vast majority of their philanthropy went to general things in the community, not specifically Jewish charities. They went to the museums and the universities and the operas and good causes that because they felt very loyal to America where they've done well and been accepted and have freedom and super appreciative and wanting to benefit and improve American society. But now many of them feeling that there's so much of attack on the Jewish community that they need to focus their philanthropy on Jewish needs because we're getting so attacked from the left, from the right. And we need to like hunker down. So this is something that affects, you know, a lot more than just the Jewish community, not to mention, you know, like in New York with Mamdani, you know, lots and lots of Jewish business people, I'm sure will end up leaving for both economic.
I've seen some of the same phenomenon, but I would take it a step further than Ephraim's taken it. I was an active alumni of the University of California, Berkeley, where I get my PhD. And I actually would donate money to my alma mater. And when I would go to the alumni meetings where they were talking with the donors, they would say that, you know, amongst the many of their donors were from the Jewish community. And if you go on the campus, you see many buildings. They're not named after scientists or famous Nobel Prize winners from the university. They're named, they have Jewish names. And they told me that a lot of their funding has started getting cut. But I think it's for a slightly different reason from Ephraim's saying. It's people are really, I would say, very upset with the way the universities have handled the epidemic of anti-Semitism on major university campuses in the United States. Jewish students can't, and I can back that up. I have a relative who's a vice chancellor at a major university, Washington University in St. Louis, and he reports to me that their university, along with Vanderbilt and Emory College, are seeing calls from Jewish families pleading to get their students transferred out of the Ivies or Pomona College, for example, in LA, into their schools because they're pulling them out because of they can't, even if they don't really care about Israel, the families, they can't get the class, they can't study because these rioters block their way.
Yeah. It's a hostile environment. Yeah.
Very hostile.
Do you, you know, as we look at this in a broad way, you know, again, as we understand the end, that the whole world actually comes against Israel. Do you have any thoughts about the theology of that? And is this just starting to act toward even the America, you know, doesn't support Israel at the end? So is that you just see this as a spiritual thing and it's going to happen? And what's your perspective on that as it looks at, you know, the biblical prophecies?
I can speak.
Maybe you should take that one.
So I would say that as a believing religious Jew, it's a lot easier for us to absorb this wave of hatred and anti-Semitism because we, as religious Jews, we know where this is coming from. We have a sense, both a historical sense, prophetic sense, and also a philosophical sense of why we have been hated, why it's so consistent, and why the end of days prophecies are the way they are. And, you know, we see it as a reflection of the fact that we are a light unto nations. When light wants to shine, we'll want to put out that light. But whenever evil starts raising its head, whenever people are against free speech, are promoting dictatorial approaches, fanatics in some way, are anti the freedom, all those powers are going to want to snuff out the people who brought those values to the world in the first place, and who still represent, you know, a godly tradition that respects individual freedoms and rights. So we know where this is coming from, and we've seen it for 2,000, you know, close to 3,000 years, and we have been expecting it to, you know, at the end of days. Mm-hmm. So it's for us, our less religious, more secular fellow Jews, they're just like, you know, and I have family in this category, they're just like, what the heck is going on? Because it's so completely irrational.
Right.
When you have a understanding of what Israel's position is and who is hating us and whose side they're and, you know, I mean, like queers for Palestine, where we all know they would be like strung up on lampposts and tortured and killed if they stepped in, and they are the ones who are teaming up with the neo-Nazis, who they don't agree with anything on, but to hate the Jews they are. So like, so people like, you know, my relatives that are not religious and don't, they're just like, you know, really freaked out, upset, and puzzled. So as religious Jews, it's easier for us because we know where this is coming from. Not that we're pleased about it and not happy, but, you know, We also sort of, you know, are not surprised when it gets worse, because it gets worse before it gets better. And non-religious people sort of think, well, this is so irrational, it's got to get better. You know, so they're just going to, like, you know, get their act together and realize, all right, Hamas is the bad guys. How do we lose track of that? Yes. So, yeah, we see it as, you know, fulfillment of our destiny and our prophecies. And it's actually pretty fascinating when you look at it from that perspective. It's still not happy, of course. And it's, you know, it's not nice to be hated. And it's very disturbing that the world is going in that direction. But on the other hand, such an irrational phenomenon that can only be explained a religious, biblical philosophy.
Do the people that you're talking about, do they, you know, since they do have some knowledge of the Old Testament, from your perspective, do they talk about that? Do they think about that as, hey, we could be entering into that period where this could be the end of days, number one? And two, do they ever look at what some of the New Testament things says about the same thing?
So in terms of the end of days stuff, the Jewish people collectively have had bad experiences with messianic being too focused on messianic stuff. That throughout our history, there have been a lot of people that have stood up and we thought they were the Messiah. They breathed hope. There was anti-Semitism, Shabtai Tzvi being a famous one, and it's left real trauma in the Jewish community. So also there's been so many times where there are false expectations. Like, things are so bad, you know, during the pogroms in Russia, you know, 150 years ago, or during the Holocaust. It's like so bad, it must be that the Messiah is around the corner, not around the corner. And it's a real downer. There's not a whole lot of talk about the end of days. When the end of days comes, the end of days will come. And get going in that direction, you know, when and how, we'll leave it to God.
I'd love to hear from you, Eric, but do they look at all at some of the New Testament stuff that talks about the end of days, which you get, you know, like this book of Revelation and other books that talk specifically about it, where Israel is the center of attention?
Eric,
I'm not sure I can give an intelligent answer to that question, but I think what, a slightly different perspective, and one that I hear in my circles. So I'll just tell the story. I was sailing in Greece for a week in the second and part of the third week of September. And one of the crew members all of a sudden came up and told me that Charlie Kirk was assassinated. And I had never heard of the guy, quite honestly, but he had, and he's a younger guy than I am. And turns out that the children of my wife here in Israel, Israeli, all born here in Israel, they all knew who he was. Mm. They were almost followers of the guy. And so I quickly learned who he was and what he stood for. And I think it's along those lines that it's what I see going on. That is, the if you ask one of these demonstrators that's running around Columbia University or London Square, you know, London's central squares, and they hate Israel and want to see it annihilated. And then if you ask them, well, what do you think about the United States? What do you think about Great Britain? Oh, they got to go too. And so this is more of, I mean, I'm in a circle of friends here that we used to advocate for Israel on campus, at the Berkeley campus years ago. And we've gotten together and discussed the situation. And there's a disagreement among us about what we could have been doing better here in terms of explaining our status and the reasons we do what we do here in Israel to the outer world. And I've taken the view that we're just, Israel is just in the wrong place at the wrong time at the moment. But we're caught up in this wave of anti-West attitudes that are growing primarily in Europe, but spilling over into Canada and to some extent the United States, wherein there's a hatred for all the values that came out of the Judeo-Christian legacy. There's a total rejection. It aligns with the church attendance. It aligns with everything else. And there's no isms. I mean, what I've read, the text about it, is there's a lack of quote-unquote isms. There's no cap. Everyone hates capitalism doesn't work in their eyes. Communism doesn't work in their eyes. Socialism doesn't work in their eyes. And you go through all the isms, not just economic ones, but also Catholicism is a failure in their eyes. And you go through all the isms, they're all dead. So there's no more ism anymore. Of course, except for anti-Semitism is one of them. And so for them, there's this convenient marriage of the fanatical Islamic slant of, not all Muslims are this way, of course, but the ones who are the jihadi tendencies, and there are quite a few of them now, have snuck into the West and become citizens of some of the Western countries. There's a grand marriage between them and this progressive movement. You can see it in this idiot Greta Thunberg, you know. I mean, most Swedes that I've heard from, they hope we put her in prison because they don't want her back. There's a moron. I mean, a total moron running around the world advocating for things she has no clue what's going on.
Right.
And this is just evidential of what's really going on throughout much of Europe.
If the isms are being considered worthless and no value, what are they looking then for? What they believe would be next or should be or should be?
I don't think that they know. I think all they know is what they hate. They don't know what they love.
But if they're looking to create chaos and unrest, just some sort of a revolution and get rid of the old, and something better will come in. But right now, their goal is just to create unrest and hatred and disunity and try and bring down what they see as the enemy, which is, I agree with Eric, most importantly, the United States, but any type of Western democracy. And they're clear about it, you know. It's only because the media doesn't pick it up, but in every single one of these anti-Israel rallies, they're calling to destroy the big Satan. They call the United States empire.
Yeah.
We have to bring down empire from within, and it's constant throughout their demonstrations. And that's why at every demonstration, it's not just the radical Muslims, always the socialists, the unions, the like a whole slew of Black Lives Matter. Mm. People know nothing about the Middle East situation, but are really bent on destroying the order and defunding the police. You know, all that's like part of the package that they're trying to you know, just destroy the fabric of the West. And from what I understand, it's being well funded by.
Now, of course, there are a lot of signs that you here and there of a backlash in the United States. You know, I mean,
yeah.
You know, in San Francisco, they threw out the attorney general when they started seeing all the problems emerging. He's still dealing with problems. We'll see what happens in New York, Maryland. Everyone's predicting, of course, that Romney wins, and then we'll see what happens. I read the Free Press here quite frequently. I've been a subscriber since they started. I'm not sure your listeners are familiar with it's an online news outlet that I would encourage them to go just check out online. It's called the Free Press, and it's published daily, and they've documented, you know, just how the police force is now in New York saying that they're there'd be massive resignations should this guy get elected. Mm-hmm. You know, my guess is it'll go back to what it was before Giuliani took over in New York,
yeah,
which was nobody would go to Broadway. Midtown would be a network of brothels and drug dealers, and people would stop going into the city, except during the day to work. But we'll see what happens. I mean, that's my guess of what will happen.
So when they start experiencing those kinds of things, do you think there'll be a return back to normalcy then? They say, wait a minute, this doesn't work?
You know, one of the beautiful things about the United States is that it's gone in certain directions and swung back. It was able to manage that quite well. During my generation, when we were, you know, I wasn't part of the protests, but when people were out protesting the Vietnam War, and then all of a sudden, you know, the weathermen appeared and people were getting killed and banks were getting robbed. People said, oh my God, this has gone haywire, and things have kind of shifted back to the center. I certainly am hopeful, and I hope this happens in the United States. I'm not sure if it's still possible in Europe. I'm not sure how far Canada is along. But the United States is recoverable because it's elastic. It's recovered many times before from things like this, and hopefully it will. I don't know. Europe, I'm more pessimistic about.
And it's also already been limiting immigration, because a lot of this is fueled by immigrants that lead the charge. Yeah, so people that I speak to feel that Canada and Europe are probably not going to turn around, but the United States still has some hope to...
I think one of the key reasons why the United States has a chance of swinging back is because of people like you and your listeners. There's a large portion of the U.S. population that go to church, that believe, you know, in the legacy that was created by Jesus and the Jewish legacy that preceded him, and what it means for Western society and what it created for the world. And what all these people deny is the fact that under, you know, the Western influence, and particularly the United States, emerged as the key power. Poverty has reached its lowest level recorded ever in human history, yeah, as a percentage of people. But that doesn't matter to anybody, any of these idiots that are protesting in Columbia's campus and elsewhere, because they don't know, they don't care. They're total idiots. They go to college to learn nothing. Like, you know, things like, you know, Charlie Kirk, and maybe what his wife can do in the aftermath of his assassination, and there are other, you know, other organizations like your own that are grassroots based. That's why I can hope that there's a chance that the U.S. can swing back. But I don't see anything like what you guys do in Europe. Nothing. Uh-huh. I mean, it's minuscule, and church attendance is really down to nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't, just to give your listeners an anecdote. Okay. So a few years ago, my wife comes to me and says, "Do you want to go? Ben Shapiro's coming. Do you want to go listen to him?" I said, "I don't know." So she sent me the link to go online. And he was coming with Jordan Peterson. Oh, I said, "Oh, I want to go here, Jordan." And so I bought a ticket, and then I called a few friends of mine who are more to the left of the political spectrum. But I said, "You guys got to go come hear this guy." And they came also. I went into this auditorium. It's like one of the largest. It's Binyan Uma. And it's like one of the largest auditoriums in Israel. It was like, 8,000 people, I think, in terms of seating. I expected to see all people like me, mostly native English speakers, well into their 60s and 70s. But I was totally wrong. Here's Jordan Peterson. He gets on the stage. There's standing room only of kids. And it turns out that my wife ended up going because one of her best friends, her children, bought them tickets to go. And her children are big followers of Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson got a 15-minute standing ovation from this crowd. Mm-hmm. There were almost 90% native Hebrew speakers. Most, I would say, are observant Jews. And they were all under the age of 30. You know, except for like maybe 10% of us. And I turned to the friends of mine, and I said, "There's hope in the next generation in this country." Yeah. They get it. They understand. They understand the importance of history and the legacy of what our forefathers created and what it brought to the world. And to throw it away like all these idiots at Columbia University want is totally ridiculous. Okay, yeah. So I'll stop.
Yeah, no, it's good. We appreciate you sharing all this, and keep thinking about anti-Semitism and the movement of it, which isn't rational at all, that we do understand it's spiritual. Like you said, maybe America will swing back to middle. I agree with you. I don't think Europe or Canada maybe will. So that'll be an interesting dynamic, you know, to see where that ultimately goes with it. So help. Thank you for giving us kind of insight about all that. And we so appreciate you guys being on, and we'd love to. We're going to, in next session, which will be next week, we want to talk about Gaza and the hostages and all that. So we'll get into that. So thank you so much for this beautiful understanding and really what's happening in the world, which we need to take account of.
Yeah, it's fantastic to get y'all's insight. We appreciate you so much. So thanks for joining us. And listeners, thank you for joining us. If you have questions from today's broadcast, send them in to us at questions@abideministries.com. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
Yep. We'll see you guys later.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.